I was all alone. My times of trouble and pain. I used to think there was no one else who felt the cold and rain. Then I woke up to humanity. We were standing
Good morning. This is John Neeters, doctor of acupuncture and oriental medicine, back here for another Thursday morning as your host of The Balancing Point. So I'm looking forward to having some fun this morning. So I hope you've got some good questions to look into, to engage in inquiry. Actually, that reminds me, I want to talk about something about inquiry a little later in the program. So I'm going to make myself a little note here. So, wide open, the phone number here is 415-543-8255. Please call in, you know the number. I would recommend, one of my favorite patients, Roger, when he comes in, will give me feedback on the show. And he was talking to me yesterday about how poor the sound quality is, so we're going to take some steps to help remedy that. And he also said, hey, remind your listeners to get a pen and paper out so that they can write this stuff down. So if you're somewhere where that's safe, if you're driving in your car, do not do that. But if you're somewhere safe, go ahead and get out a pen and paper, because I'm sure we're going to have some things come up today that will be of interest to you. So I'm going to go ahead and take calls. I see we have a caller already. Hi, this is Dr. Neeters.
Hello, John. It's David.
Hi, David. Good to hear from you. Those of you that are not aware, and I assume there are very few of you, this is Dave Stouter. Dave's the host of the Vitamin Shelf, the show that just precedes mine on Thursdays. And Dave does a couple of other shows that hopefully I have a minute for him to talk about. And also we co-host The Medicine Men, which airs Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. So, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Well, you know, a couple things, but let me say about The Medicine Men, the last couple of shows that we did on blood sugar were very well received, and I just told Kwong that we would run them in the next 2 weeks. So those of you that maybe didn't hear them at all or didn't hear both of them, this coming Monday, 7 to 8 a.m., as John just said, will be part one, and then the following Monday, part two. John, I want to talk about something that's going on politically. You mentioned I do other programs. There's a special edition of the Vitamin Shelf on from Tuesday 9 to 10, and this Tuesday I devoted it to giving plenty of background on the politics and regulations of health freedom so that people would understand the issue and take action. So briefly, because people can tune in next Tuesday and listen to it, the FDA is up to its old tricks again. In the law that we passed in 1994 called the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, there was a provision for what they call new dietary ingredients. So if you're a supplement company and you want to introduce a nutrient, an herb, something that maybe hasn't been in the pipeline, you know, you're supposed to file some, you know, let the FDA know we're introducing acai berries into the marketplace. We're introducing noni, you know, new things that we find. Well, they were asked to sort of codify what companies should do in that case, and they were asked to do it by the law 17 years ago. So it's taken them 17 years, and in a nutshell, what they've decided to do, John, I'm going to make you a supplement company for the moment, okay?
Okay.
So,
God, I wish.
Okay, there you go. Neeters Vitamins, all right? So what they intend to do, your assumption was in 1994, anything you had on the shelf at the time was grandfathered in. That's what the law said, but it didn't make it specific. So they're going to come to you and say, Dr. Neeters, you claim to have been selling, Yin Chow. Can you document from 17 years ago that you had it in the marketplace? Now, if you can't, they have the right to yank it off the shelf till you do a couple years of expensive testing. Or let's say you can document it, okay? And they go, well, actually, Dr. Neeters, the traditional Chinese yin chow has been on the market, but you know, you're making it in a manufacturer in Alameda, and they're using a different extraction process, so it's not actually the same thing. Therefore, we're going to have to take it off the market and test it. Now, this would put at risk about 70% of what's on the health food store shelves if these regulations are indeed followed through upon. And one other danger. Even if the FDA were to agree to leave these safe products on the shelf while the, quote, testing is being done, the amount of money it would cost to test them would basically use up every bit of potential profit in the entire dietary supplement industry for 12 to 15 years. So one way or the other, this is not meant to increase public safety, which is how it's being sold, but it's just going to strangle this industry. And, John, you know what? Can you really make dietary supplements any safer?
I don't see how. As you and I have both quoted several times, when you look back 2007, 2008, the agencies and the federal government who report these things show zero deaths from any and all herbs, supplements, vitamins, and minerals. You know, it's hard to imagine safer than that. And, you know, when we look at drugs properly prescribed, killing over 100,000 people a year, and total, it's probably more like 800,000 when we look at all the manifestations, we look at the 200 known cancer-causing chemicals that were never tested, ever, never got approval, that have been introduced into our lifestyle that are killing hundreds of thousands of people, and herbs, supplements, minerals, vitamins don't kill anybody. So it's obviously an obvious attempt. It's a power grab, as we well know, because the only people that will spend the money, the only people who have the money to spend, will be the large manufacturing companies, the drug companies, who will then gain control over the supplement industry, which they've been trying to do for quite a while.
It's true. And not only that, even if the FDA didn't necessarily barge right in and just yank 70% of the products off the shelf right away, just the very fact that they have that arbitrary hammer hanging over the entire industry will stymie innovation and things. And look, these things are valuable, people. So you may use one supplement, no supplements, or 50 supplements, but your freedom is at risk. And see, here's a clear example of the government coming in, and even if they're well-meaning, and I doubt that, but I'll give it to them just for the sake of this discussion, even if they're well-meaning, this is just onerous, useless regulation. So what do we do about it? At the moment, these are proposed FDA regulations. In other words, the FDA has said, this is a document that shows how we're looking at the situation, and we want comment. Now, they mostly want comment from stakeholders, as they say, like supplement companies and retailers, but anybody can get in contact. The best resource, and it's just about finished, but I want you all to go there. Bill Sardi and myself and others have put together sort of a little website or whatever you want to say, OperationPushback.com, because we feel that we've all sat silent here and let the FDA in the media criticize us, tell people that we're quacks, that we just want to take advantage of people who are sick and vulnerable, that, the things you're doing, John. I mean, come on, you're an acupuncturist. You stick little needles in people. Come on, they should be at the hospital with their doctors. You know, and all these vitamin pills, they're unregulated, they're not tested, they're not scientifically proven. It's terrible we have such a free country that this kind of thing should go on. This is the thinking of the people. So please, go to Operation Pushback. We just want to get your contact information, because what we intend to do is get people from all over the country, and when the time comes, we're going to let the people in Congress know, state legislators know, the media. We're going to assert our health freedom, not just for these regulations, but it's time people realize these are food supplements. They are not under-regulated drugs. They are highly regulated foods. They are the safest thing that you can consume, and they will save us millions, if not billions, of dollars in health care costs if we would adopt a healthier lifestyle. That's what you're about. That's what I'm about. So please, everybody, if you can, tune in on Tuesdays. I'm just going to run this long explanation Tuesdays from 9 to 10 on KEST, and go to OperationPushback.com. And I appreciate, John, you giving me the time to sort of let people know what's going on. Some people already called me concerned. But I'm going to sign off, but I want to leave you with a question from one of my customers who will be able to listen to you at thebalancingpoint.net, but won't be able to tune in live today, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a quick note to my wife, turn your phone back on so I can call you, sweetie.
Okay.
because I know Brenda is listening. Ganglial cysts. Now, it's like I had one on my wrist, and your compatriot and good friend, Doc Mitchell, down in Los Gatos, first time I ever had acupuncture, you know, he did a couple treatments, and it shrank down to about one-fifth its size and doesn't hurt anymore. But this lady has a daughter. She's 19. She keeps getting one on the back of her hand. It grows. It goes away. It grows, you know. And the doctors are talking surgery and stuff. And I said, you know, you ought to talk to John Neders and see how Chinese medicine handles that kind of issue. So, John, I'm going to thank you. I'm going to sign off and listen. And if you could just sort of discuss what people might do about ganglial cysts, I would be very pleased.
Cool. Hey, Dave, you know, those used to be called Bible cysts.
Really?
Yeah. You know why? Because the way those were treated historically, usually the biggest book and sometimes the only book in a household was the Bible, and it was a big, heavy book. And so they'd have usually these occur on the wrist. That's the most typical place. And so they'd have you lay your hand out, and they'd smash the cyst with the Bible. So they call them Bible cysts. I love that.
Well, you know, actually, the mom was telling me that the girl's boyfriend had smacked her with a book a couple of times,
mm-hmm.
and it works. It goes away, but it keeps coming back. So she was looking for some kind of strategy to maybe remove that inflammation or get the circulation going or whatever it is one needs to do.
Yeah, cool. I'll talk about that.
Okay, John.
Okay, thanks, Dave, and thanks for all that information. I hope people tune in Tuesday to get the full story.
Sure.
All right.
Thanks.
Yeah, ganglial cysts are generally not dangerous. They're just areas where the typically on the wrist and the fingers on the feet are the most typical locations for them, and they'll just show up as little bumps, and they sometimes freak people out. They think they have a tumor, but it's not. It's just fluid-filled cyst. So there's actually the Western pathology, I guess, of it, there's still not a certain exactly, last I heard, why those form, but there seems to be a problem with the little valves there and fluid leaks out of the joint because there's synovial fluid. There's fluid in these joints. That's what allows them to move so freely. We have bursa, which are sacs, fluid-filled sacs, kind of like if you were going to ship something. You might put those little air cushions to wrap things. Now, we get lots of products here, and they either have these kind of big air-filled sacs, or they'll have the little bubble wrap. And so imagine if those were just filled with fluid. And so our body, at most of our articulations where joints come together, there will be bursa, which allow for free movement of tendons, ligaments, etc., so they don't bind against the bone, so they don't hit the bone. Now, around most, again, then there's a sheath that is around the tendons itself, and that should have a lot of fluid in it to make it so that the tendon slides in and out very easily. Sometimes, with certain types of wrist injuries, in particular, de Cavain syndrome, synovial fluid dries out, you get inflammation in there, and then the tendon actually adheres to the sheath. And boy, that is painful. When you try to pull on it, just imagine it's glued to the sheath, so it's kind of tearing the tissue. The ganglion cyst is, though, when that fluid comes out of the joint, but it doesn't go back into the joint. So there's an improper functioning there, and you get this bump. I mentioned that it's called a Bible cyst, but I actually recommend that people don't handle it that way because it can actually make it worse, and usually it just comes right back. You know, it may take a little while. in Western pathophysiology, Western medicine, they will sometimes do surgery. But even then, about 10% or so of the time, even after they remove the structure, people still get it back. So, you know, it's a problem. From a Western medical standpoint, you could have it drained. You know, you just put a needle in there and pull it out. From a Chinese standpoint, in China, they would use these big needles and drain it. Here, we just try to increase the qi flow through the area, through the channels that are affected, and around there, and we will needle around, typically, there are a variety of treatments, but typically right around the cyst. We also do a very similar thing around lipomas, which are fatty deposits as opposed to water, and in both cases we get pretty good results, usually not resolving it completely, but often we'll get it down 80 to 90% in size just by getting those fluids to move properly. It's not a life-threatening situation, but they can be, you know, they're not very attractive, and they can sometimes get large enough to be bothersome. So we typically will do, like I said, acupuncture around there. There are some liniments that can be put on externally to help with blood flow help resolve some of the fluids also. Let's see, do we have any callers on the line, Kwong? Hello, this is Dr. Neeters.
Hey, John, this is Sheila.
Hi, Sheila.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Quick question. I'm pressed for time. My sister went to the blog on trigeminal neuralgia.
Uh-huh.
She had called you a couple of weeks ago.
I have to be honest, I don't even know what's on my blog. The way those things get on there is I'm answering questions for other acupuncturists or maybe patients or students, and I will send a copy to my wife, and if she likes it, she puts it on.
Okay. So my sister wanted me to ask you about OPC. She did her research, you know, as best she could. Basically, what she wants to know is, what do you recommend? Is there any particular one that you use, or is there a website that you can recommend that she can, you know, go and
for OPC?
OPCs.
Okay. I'm trying to, again, follow one of Roger's bits of advice, which I really appreciate, which is to kind of repeat things and to let people know what I'm talking about. So OPC is the short for oligomeric proanthocyanidin.
Yeah, that's what
okay?
she said. Yeah.
And these OPCs are really pretty trippy. These oligomeric proanthocyanidins are, if you think about grapes, for example, one of the things that gives them, you know, we know cyan, the color cyan, which you'll find if you have to replace a printer cartridge. So these cyanidins tend to be dark blue or purplish in color, and they would give a lot of our very high antioxidant level fruits their color, grapes, blueberries, etc. They will have a very high level of oligomeric proanthocyanidins. Now, one of the things to remember about these fruits is that out in nature, particularly if they are not, if you don't use pesticides, they are constantly, I mean, at every moment of their life cycle, having to protect themselves from some form of pest, right? There are fungi. Fungus will grow. They'll get fungus cultures. Bacteria will try to invade them for all that delicious sugar. Then you get insect pests that will want to eat it. Again, what an incredible food source. And so they're constantly having to protect themselves. By the way, this is one of the things that makes organic fruits and vegetables so much better for you, is you have to use a much heartier, much healthier stock in order that it can protect itself from all of these pests. If you just take the easiest to grow forms, which may not be as strong, may not be as hardy, and protect them with pesticides, you start to lose a lot of these antioxidant qualities because the plant doesn't have to protect itself. You know, we know penicillin was originally found from citrus fruits, and it was found that this penicillin would protect it, the would kill bacteria. Well, that's how these citrus fruits protected themselves. The proanthocyanidins are very, very condensed flavanols, tannins, doesn't really matter what we think of them as, but they're very condensed, and they protect the fruit. Well, for us, that antioxidant quality, fortunately, we can utilize when we eat these categories or these fruits, and primarily that have high content of this. There are other plants that also have those, but usually we're thinking about things like the tea. Tea has it in high concentrations. Green tea, black tea, and then the dark berries, cranberries, bilberries, etc. And apples have a fairly high content. So all of these are very good sources of these oligomeric proanthocyanidins, which have very powerful antioxidant qualities. So what antioxidants do, oxidation is the process of, I'm not going to go into the oxidation process. So anyway, oxidation releases these free electrons, which are called free radicals. And what it's kind of, I remember watching Walt Disney when I was a kid, and they had a room set up with mouse traps with ping pong balls on them, and they threw one ping pong ball into the room, and they got thousands of reactions. That's kind of what happens with a free radical, and the free radical is going at I think it's going the speed of light. I'm not sure how fast an electron goes, but it is amazingly fast, and it hits other tissue and destroys them. And so what we want to do is have something there that kind of sops up or catches those free radicals. And those are called antioxidants, because it's usually an oxidative in the oxygen reaction that free electron or that free radical that causes all the damage is given off. So we want that, which are antioxidants. So this quality or this grouping of oligomeric proanthocyanidins and other cyanidins are some of the best at doing that. I use them for a lot of things, but one of the things that I most use them for is for artery protection, because it's in the arteries. Oxygen is one of the and oxidative reactions are the primary producers of free radicals. Well, oxygen is carried through the bloodstream on the red blood cells, and then it gets released. Well, in that process, you give off some free radicals. And so iron is a big, big, big cause of oxidation. So iron is flowing through our blood vessels constantly. If it wasn't, we would die, because we need that. And so these are protecting us from that process. And there are lots and lots of these that do that. In terms of manufacturers, I don't have a recommendation. There are many, many good manufacturers. We buy from a couple, but I have no reason to believe that if you go into if you call Dave Stouter, go into his health food store, any good health food store, they will carry a good brand of oligomeric proanthocyanidins. Now, the one that has actually been the most studied, or at least the last time I looked, I don't know if this is still true, but the one that was the most studied and the most research was done on was a patented extract, which is called pycnogenol, P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L. And that's actually extracted from a type of pine bark, maritime pine bark, and it has an extremely high level of proanthocyanidins, very, very high. Now, I don't use pycnogenol so much because it's much more expensive than OPC, and I get good results with OPC. If I do get someone that, say, has thrombosis, severe varicose veins, and they have a high possibility of getting a deep vein thrombosis, if they're going to fly, then I would put them on pycnogenol because it's been better tested. For the rest of the public, uh-huh.
John, how do you spell that pycnogenol again?
P-Y-C.
P as in Paul.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Y-C. Mm-hmm. N-O, G, as in George, E-N-O-L. And that's the patented form. And because there are more studies and there's more research, and we know what that does, when I have someone that's a very severe, you know, and I know it's a really critical, I will have them do that. If it's more as a general protective function, I'm usually fine with OPC because there are enough studies, and I see clinically that it does a really good job.
Okay, so she says when she goes to research it, it's just like, yeah, all this information.
Well, yeah, and of course, one of the problems
is... So you recommend just going into her local health food store.
Yes.
And see what, you know, they can recommend. And do you just happen to know what could be on the shelf in your in the health food store?
No, I don't. Every store will carry stuff by different companies.
Mm-hmm.
And probably if you buy any of the major companies, you're probably okay there.
Okay.
Again, I buy from nutraceutical companies primarily, who, and their testing is just superb.
Mm-hmm.
These are incredible companies. I really trust their formulations, but those are frequently not available to the general public.
I see.
So in terms of what's out there in a health food store, it's likely going to be a different product than what I use.
Okay. Thank you.
So again, this is really critical for connective tissue. So anyone has... joint problems, blood vessel problems, anything like that, OPC can be exceedingly valuable.
Thank you, John.
Hey, you're welcome. Good to hear from you again.
Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye. Let's go ahead and take another phone call. Hi, Dr. Nieders.
Good morning, John. This is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. Lynn,
hey.
Lynn Belcher?
That's right.
Well, hi, Lynn Belcher.
Hey, good morning.
Lynn is an acupuncturist that works here in my clinic 3 days a week. So what's up?
Well, just initially, nuggets of gold on your show. I just want to thank you. As an acupuncturist myself, I just listen and I learn more and more, so I really appreciate it.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I just wanted to call in and talk about Twaina a little bit today. The other day I called and spoke about Chinna's song. So.
And I got a lot of great feedback about the Chinna's song, by the way. At least one patient a day comes in asking me more questions about Chinna's song.
Good.
In fact, I had someone say, who's a fertility patient, saying, do you think I need that weird stomach stuff? So it's great.
So Twaina, it's spelled T-U-I space N-A. I actually had a sign outside of my office that said Twaina on a blackboard, and somebody erased the I and thought it was tuna massage.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a close way to remember it.
Right.
But it's been practiced by martial artists and Qigong practitioners for about 3,000 years, just like Chinna's song. So roughly what that means is push, grab. And it uses the same principles of diagnosis and treatment as Chinese medicine does. And this is to restore the balance of yin and yang. So that's that push, grabbing. On one hand, we're smoothing and pushing to disperse obstruction. And on the other hand, we're grabbing and checking to restrain hyperfunction. So really just to balance, restore balance in the body. So
go ahead.
When I start a Twaina session, I use a variety of different hand techniques to invigorate the area that I'm working on. And then once the area is warmed, I use other techniques to manipulate soft tissue and touch upon acupuncture meridians and points. And so all the while I'm incorporating breathing or stretching, a range of motion. So it's kind of like what we know as physical therapy, except for a lot better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. My opinion, too. A lot of people will ask me about Twaina, and I find, like, say, well, what are the techniques? And while there are some techniques that are used more than others, it basically encompasses everything in a way. You know, the guy that invented, in quotes, Swedish massage actually went to China and studied Twaina and then came back and created his Swedish massage, right? And I find so many of these techniques are really facets of Twaina that have been pulled out, and there's a focus, say, on one particular area. And what I love about the Twaina that you do is that it is so all-encompassing. You know, I've seen you, you know, do many, many different types of things.
Right. Yeah, it's I can push on a particular you know, I'll just push on a particular point and do range of motion. I can really do any hand technique that is comfortable for my body, so that's conserving my energy. And that's another thing, that you just really want to use your weight and conserve as much energy as possible. So a massage will last anywhere between 5 minutes to 25 minutes. And that's another thing that people understand. It's like, okay, 5 minutes, you're done. And it's like, yes, that's all you need right now.
Yes. It's very different than doing the one-hour kind of Swedish massage that we've kind of this whole one-hour thing is very trippy to me. Everything in our culture is now done in an hour, right? As though somehow everything needs to be an hour long and can be accomplished in an hour, right? And so in Tweena, you do what needs to be done, right? If it's freeing up a trapped tendon, that might take 2 minutes, right? If
sure.
it's working on an area to really increase qi and blood flow, it might be 25 or 30 minutes. But, yeah, it's dependent. It's really a healing modality that is based upon what needs to be done.
Right. And it's another strange thing, because it's often performed over clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're wearing soft clothing, it's great to do Tweena over clothing. But a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not taking my clothes off, so this must not really be a thing. And I find that people think that a lot. And about acupuncture, too. Like, they're going to the doctor's office and they need to strip down.
Right.
So I've been treating a lot of soft tissue injuries, neck pain, stiffness, lumbar pain, knee, rotator cuff. I've been doing a lot of frozen shoulder lately, which is really difficult, or at least time-consuming to treat. But I wanted to remind your listeners that if they have a specific injury and they've been wanting to rehab, that they should find a Tweena practitioner in their area, because it's highly effective.
Thank you. Yeah, and the training is very extensive, and it's really a wonderful modality. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. See you later.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, Lynn worked on my shoulder last week. Being a guy, I tend not to I use that as an excuse too much, I guess, but tend not to, you know, once something is functional and I can use it, it's okay if it still hurts, right? And she had me on the table working me through some areas where I had some real tendon problems, and it was great. You know, my shoulder was much better afterwards. Let's go ahead and take another call. Hi, this is John Nieder.
Oh, hi, John.
Hey, Kent. We're getting all... We got Sheila and Lynn and Dave today. This is fabulous.
Well, it's a lot of the regulars are...
Yeah.
Well, I'm back from the wild, barbaric land of Canada.
Oh, congratulations. Well, not on being back, but on getting up there.
That's right. It's very, very pretty place.
Yeah.
Anyway, by the way, you were mentioning suppressing some of the antioxidants from using chemicals. One well-known nutrient that's suppressed by fungicides is resveratrol, since it's
yep.
a response to fungal attack.
Precisely. And again, we're looking again at these incredibly, you know, the whole French paradox, I guess I call it, right, is how these French can drink all this wine and smoke like fiends and not really get that much exercise and still be healthier mostly than Americans, right?
Right.
Well, part of that is they get massive antioxidant content in their foods, lots of anti-inflammatory foods. By the way, their wine tends to be have grapes that have higher resveratrol content
uh-huh.
than American grapes.
Well, I don't know if it's because of fewer chemicals. That may be so, and it may be because they just may be in a moister place where they just have more fungus.
Absolutely. You want like things like golden seal, which is, to me, right at the top of all herbal products, and I don't use much just because of conservation issues. You know, it's been so overused, and we have Coptis, which is very similar. But golden seal grows basically in areas where, you know, it's just nothing there but fungus and bacteria, you know, these root structures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's why. So that's why these things have to have such powerful healing properties.
Is golden seal not farmed? It's just simply gathered?
No, it can be farmed, and most of what we get now is farmed, but it's hard to farm because of the type of land that you have to have. Wild-crafted golden seal is better. It's, you know, it's like ginseng. It's had more time to develop, and it is a very hard to find. It is very expensive. It's been grossly over-farmed, you know, or not over-wild-crafted. So if you're fortunate enough to find wild golden seal, you know, or wild-grown golden seal, you know, the problem is you know, in buying it, you know, are you further depleting and supporting the depletion of it? So it's really kind of a conscience issue there. But there is certainly most of the golden seal we find is farmed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait. Susan and I just got like a 4.5-acre parcel of land, and we're wondering what to do with it.
Oh, go golden seal.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Several of my students are just wonderful, wonderful herb gardeners, and they do regular classes, one down in Santa Cruz, and it's just fabulous stuff, and teaching, you know, the botany and then the horticulture of these Chinese herbs. And there are several companies now that have been formed here in the Bay Area who are buying those herbs and then preparing them for organic herbal compounds. So it's a big, there's going to be a big jump in that. So I think as a service to humanity and as a moneymaker, it's a great way to go.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I mean, like, that goes right to what Dave Stouter was talking about, the threat of the government maybe stepping in and say, well, you can't sell that, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that may be a bit of a challenge.
Well, these things are not going to disappear, I don't suspect. It's just going to be who's going to be buying it from you.
Right.
You know? And it's very sad. I mean, and there's often with these things, there's this, I remember talking to students 10 years ago about some of the laws that have come into effect over the last few years, and they literally would kind of laugh at me. It's like, oh, this crazy old man, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I would, you know, but look at Europe. You know, it's really been shut down in terms of supplementation. You look at, and what's happening in the U.S., we're very close at any given moment of losing our ability to put into our body these very safe products that will keep us healthy. And we are very close to losing our right to do that.
Yeah, God save us from authoritarian do-gooders.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really getting crazy. I don't know if or when it will stop, but it's very scary. And again, it's primarily because most people don't take the time to educate themselves, and so they are run by the rhetoric of it, right? Oh,
right.
We're trying to save you. Oh, well, that sounds good, you know, which is, couldn't be further from the truth. That is not an attempt to save us from anything other than being able to protect ourselves.
That's right. One of the greatest lies there is. Hello, I'm from the government. I'm here to help you.
Yes, right.
You mentioned tendons earlier.
Tendons, yes.
I may have asked this question long ago, but I don't recall the exact answer. What kind of exercise and strengthens and optimizes tendons as opposed to just muscles? Because I once heard a lecturer talking about how muscles remodel much faster than tendons.
Yes.
So there's a danger that a person could build their muscles too fast, leading to tendon injuries.
Well, I think that's what we're seeing in a lot of sports. You know, if you look at football players, it's pretty obvious, the difference in the bodies. But if you look at baseball players from now, and there was a picture of Joe DiMaggio in the shower that was sold for a huge amount of money recently. And, you know, people kind of tripped out at Jolt and Joe in there from, I don't know what year it was, probably late 40s. But what I was struck by is this guy, who was perhaps the best baseball player of his time, it looked like now we would consider him undernourished.
Right.
He had very small biceps, you know. I mean, not small, but not by today's standards. And so, but at that time, there were dramatically fewer tendon injuries. Now you look at pitchers. Tommy John surgery, where they replaced the tendons, is just, it's an everyday occurrence now. It's like kind of expected that these pitchers will have that done. And the number of muscular the muscle pulls loose is very common in football injuries now. You see these biceps dissections and things. And it's because the muscles have gotten so strong that the tendons have not gotten as strong in comparison. And so they just pull them loose. They'll either shred the tendons or they'll pull them loose from the bone. So it is a big problem. In Chinese medicine, primarily in Qigong, we have these tendon change classics, and they're entire sets of exercises that are designed to build the tendon strength. And so primarily you're looking at things that are strength-type exercises. For example, yoga will tend to build tendon more than muscle. You do build muscle, but you build them in proportion because you're using body weight-type exercises that don't shred the muscle so that it gets, in order to build a larger muscle, you actually have to tear it down, and then it rebuilds larger. And in things like yoga and qigong, you're not creating that level of stress on the muscles, so you're building tendon strength that is appropriate for your muscle strength. And so many of these things develop tremendous tendon strength. And again, as I said, there are whole ways of training and books devoted to that tendon changing and tendon strengthening type of exercise.
I think that's big on in the Shaolin Temple, right?
It's huge. When you see these, like my son goes to a great, I love these guys, great kung fu school. And these guys, several of them were trained in Shaolin temples. Others were trained in other, wushu arts in China. And these guys can do things that are just amazing. I mean, they're just standing flat-footed talking to these kids, and they'll leap, just bounce like on a pogo stick. Yeah.
Yeah, pogo stick.
Yeah, straight up in the air, spin around twice, and kick and come down. And their kicks are incredibly powerful. They'd knock me right through a wall. Their punches are powerful. But these guys are very lean. They're not like your MMA fighters. They're lean, tendon strength kinds of guys as opposed to muscular strength kinds of guys. It's just amazing watching. And the feats of strength they can do when you watch them is pretty amazing. Now, they can't bench press as much weight, but they can do other things that these weightlifters can't even dream of doing.
Right, and I remember once somebody was talking about kettlebell training and so forth.
Right.
They were saying that, yeah, if you want to exercise to lift bigger and bigger kettlebells, that's fine, but it won't allow you to fight any better.
Right.
And you got to choose, why are you trying to get fit?
Yes, exactly. You know, and there's the whole thing of fast-twitch fibers versus slow-twitch fibers, et cetera, and there are different exercises that will exercise fast-twitch or slow-twitch, and a lot of the weightlifting exercises build slow-twitch muscle fibers. So you can lift a lot of weight, but you can't do it fast. And if you're in a fight, speed counts, right?
Yes.
And
everything.
Tai Chi training, which is done in slow motion, people say, well, what good is that in a fight? Those guys are some of the fastest fighters you will ever see because they are burning in perfectly developed reflex arcs. And so rather than doing it for speed where you can get a little sloppy, they're doing it at incredibly slow speed. But it burns that in so that when you need to move it quickly, you can do it with total relaxation. And the more one of the things that slows people down is if the muscles are in opposition. And in Tai Chi, you learn how not to do that, how to only use all of your attention and energy into the movement that you're doing, so there's no oppositional force. And you can only do that by relaxing the tissues and relaxing the sinews. So those people are actually faster. I mean, I've fought with both, and I'll tell you, the Tai Chi people are lightning quick.
Oh, cool.
My teacher, he hit you six times before you had before you could blink your eyes.
Uh-huh.
And he was a Tai Chi guy. He didn't have big, bulky muscles, but he had a lot of tendon strength and had trained that. So it's dramatically different.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care.
Back to Sheila's question, and I mentioned the OPCs, and the OPCs, again, those have been, there are studies that have been very, very conclusive around that in terms of microcirculation. So things like edema of the eyeballs and blood flow problems with the eyeballs and visual issues there. And so things like diabetic retinopathy, things we'd look at. But so it helps on all of those levels of healing the endothelium, this lining of the blood vessels. So, again, if it's a real serious case, I would go for pycnogenol. If it's more just for general health, you could probably go with the cheaper OPCs. I mentioned inquiry a while ago, and it's kind of up because I'm being interviewed for two television shows tonight, and one of them is kind of on my spiritual practice, which I really don't talk about much, and the other one is about the spirituality of traditional Chinese medicine, which there isn't in traditional Chinese medicine, but there is in classical Chinese medicine. Again, TCM, or traditional Chinese medicine, is the name that was given to this Chinese medicine when Mao kind of recreated it and made it line up more with Western biomedicine, which, you know, has some real value, but there was a big effort to keep anything that spoke of or even had any sense of spirituality was all removed because it was a communist country. And so they took all of that out. But classically, Chinese medicine has massive and huge, huge spiritual components. So I'm going to talk about, one show is on the Chinese issue and the other is on my spiritual path. And the one word that I would use in terms of what I feel is important in my spiritual path is inquiry. And to me, it is the source of all that is real. You know, we live primarily in this construct that we have created. We live in a constructed reality that serves to protect us from anything outside of it, right? It's our self-identity is then relating to the world so that it's created in a particular way. And it's only through deep surrender and inquiry that the possibility of actually experiencing what's true, in my opinion, that's where it lies. That's where the possibility is created, is in inquiry. And it's one of the reasons I don't teach so much in acupuncture schools now, because to me, it's the context of yin and yang, of taiji, which means the supreme ultimate, that everything, all things, which are then divided or can be divided into be more or less yin and yang. And the context of everything is wuji or nothing. And to me, the quest should be the inquiry that takes us to wuji, to the direct experience of nothing, of the absolute. And out of that, everything becomes apparent. And to me, getting the deeper, which is not accurate, but I'm going to use that word, the deeper we can get into that experience and surrender to that, I believe it informs us as healers. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be a great healer without that, but I believe it creates new possibility. And so when I deal with students, that bugs them. They don't like that. They want content, and indeed that's appropriate. They, you know, give me the answers. And so although that content is critical, absolutely critical to our work, you need to know how the points work. You need to know what the points are. The herbs in particular are content-based. You really have to get that information to be a good herbalist. In my experience, the greatest acupuncturists that I have been around have all been martial artists or contemplators and people who've looked and surrendered very deeply to this wuji, tai chi, yin yang. Herbalists, not necessarily, but acupuncturists. So anyway, I'm going to be doing a couple shows about that tonight, TV shows, and I'm telling you that by way of encouraging you, drawing you in to a sense of inquiry, to giving up what we know, which is never the truth, which is never actually known. It's just a construct, and surrendering that. And find some teachers that will support you in that inquiry. That's, to me, the core of good health. So let's go ahead and take another call.
Yeah, this is Holly from Philadelphia calling again.
Hi, Holly. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you, or good to talk to you again. My question was about my mom. She has something that was diagnosed as burning mouth syndrome.
Uh-huh.
She's in her 70s, and, you know, it happens now when she's stressed out and worried. It just feels like the tip of her tongue and her lips have been burned by something too hot.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor gave her, like, a steroid cream to put it in her mouth. It doesn't seem to be doing anything for her. And I'm working on getting her to acupuncture, but I want to know if there's anything that might help her in the meantime.
Yeah, there are quite a few things that can help. but I don't know what they are yet. Let me go over some possibilities, okay? Burning mouth syndrome, sometimes they call it burning tongue, right? Sometimes there's a glossy appearance to the tongue. It's almost like it's been burned, and that's called glossodynia. Typically, we see these in older patients. In Chinese medicine, it's typically a very severe yin deficiency, and the heat is rising up in the body. So the yin has become so deficient that there is a relative, not a true necessarily, but a relative excess of yang that comes up, and what we call a stirring of ministerial fire even. And so the heat comes up. And it can manifest in a variety of ways, but one of them is certainly with this burning tongue syndrome, and I've seen a fair amount of it. But there are quite a few things from a Western pathological symptom that can cause it. Menopause is, you know, at menopause, the tissues of the body, one of the main things that occurs is the tissues dry out. So women will experience mouth dryness, skin dryness, eye dryness, vaginal dryness, all of those symptoms. And it's because the yin of the body, the substance of the body, the blood, the fluids, have become deficient. So anything that can help that often can help the glossodynia or the burning tongue. So we would treat that primarily with, or I should say, I would treat that primarily with herbs, supplements, and diet a little bit more than acupuncture, although I would certainly use acupuncture. Some very, very good points for restoring that that yin to the body. Now, typically, how old is your mom?
72.
Okay. So there is almost certainly a pretty significant level of what we would call kidney yin deficiency. And the kidney is really kind of the source of a deeper energy, the essence of the body. And some points that you could use, you might look up, there's a point called Jiao Hai, but you'd probably be easier to find it as kidney 6. And it's a point just below the medial malleolus, or the ankle bone on the foot, kidney 6. And that has a huge effect of benefiting the throat and also the mouth. And it's very powerful for, we say it nourishes the kidneys and it clears deficient heat. So this is something that I would find very, very valuable. So we use it a lot for dry throat, pain in the throat, et cetera, even for the eyes. But anything where that heat has come up into the body, and it's particularly valuable for after menopause. I typically do systems where I'm balancing the points a little bit. And so I would balance that a couple ways. And again, these are points that you can find, in any Tweena book, in any acupressure book, in any acupuncture or acupressure book. So I would balance that with one of the points on the bladder channel for the kidney and bladder balance, and there are a few that could be chosen from. And I would typically use bladder 62. I find that's a great balance for kidney 6, and that is located exactly on the opposite side of the ankle. It's a point called Shun Mai, and that's for a lot of neck problems. We use this, but also I would use it to balance that. It's also good for what we call heart fright, insomnia, palpitations, things like that, which are from often that heat rising in the body. So I find these two to be a great pair. They're very easy to massage together, one on the inside of the ankle, one on the outside of the ankle. So I would probably tend to start there with a little acupressure. I would also do a lot of yin-building foods, things that are moist, pears, for example, lots of vegetable matter, melons really are great at reducing heat. Watermelon's fabulous for reducing heat. In fact, there's something called watermelon frost, which we actually will blow into the patient's mouth for certain conditions. I probably don't want to do that because it tastes horrible, but you could get a watermelon, eat the melon, and then go up eating into the kind of, as you're getting into the white and the green portion of the melon, that's very cooling. She could even hold that in her mouth for a while, and it's very, very soothing for this. So, and then there are a whole range of herbal formulas that could be used to treat this. And again, without seeing her and knowing her condition, I can't, you know, I'm just going to throw out one very general, the most general formula that I would consider for this, and I would undoubtedly make modification to it, but this is something that you might be able to find, and it's called Zhir Bai Di Huang Wan. So that's Zhir Bai Di Huang Wan. And it's a very, very, very safe formula. There are six herbs that are classically in a formula called Luwei Di Wang Wan, which are primarily yin builders. They work on all of the yin organs, or not all of them, but the ones that are involved here, very effectively. And then they have two heat-clearing herbs that will help with this. So that, you know, until you can get her somewhere, these are just some general ideas. I would do the acupressure. I would do a lot of fluid building herbs. I would make sure that her B vitamin and C, vitamin C content is high enough, because those the vitamin C is very heat clearing, and often with the tongue problem, there can be a B vitamin deficiency. And then I would do, you know, like I said, lots of cooling foods, melons, pears, etc. And yeah, and then get her in to see an herbalist or an acupuncturist as soon as you can.
All right, I appreciate that. That's great information.
Yeah, and thank you. I don't think anyone's ever asked that question before, so it's always fun to get new stuff.
Yeah, it was something I had never heard of. You know, she didn't even know it was actually
a condition,
had a diagnosis. She
yeah.
complained about it to her doctor, and that's what he told her it was.
Yeah. Well, Holly, thank you so much for calling.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, we're coming to the end of another episode. I hope you join me this coming Monday when we're going to have a fun show. From 9 until 10 on Monday right here at KEST. And please tune into the Medicine Men from 7 to 8 for our talk about blood sugars. Thank you and be happy.
The Beach Hut and Warming Hut